Hey, what's up, everybody?
Welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast, episode 291. I'm your host, Kendall.
And I'm your host, Josh.
We are joined by our producer, Janelle.
Hello, everyone.
Today, we are looking at a case out of Oklahoma. And it's one of those that is really frustrating because it totally had the potential to be solved, really should be solved.
Absolutely.
By now. And honestly, Aubrey, who we're going to be talking about, was absolutely discriminated against. And I think that's, I'm confident that that is why her case has not been solved to this day, because it seems pretty obvious.
Yeah. Once you hear the events that unfold here, I think you're going to be like, how is there not justice for Aubrey at this point? It will honestly piss you off, because I know for me, I'm just like, this should be so easy to solve if the police actually did their job. And to be fair, her mother and her mother's boyfriend definitely look suspicious here, because they delayed in reporting her missing.
Yeah.
And so there's definitely something going on there.
Yeah, I think they've had a hand in this not being solved as well, due to lack of cooperation and lack of care.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's just one that's, you just want to like bang your head against the wall, 'cause it's so, so frustrating.
I mean, we're going all the way out to Grove, Oklahoma,
yep,
which is out like 90 miles away from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever been in rural Oklahoma, rural America, as we've seen in many cases, the criminal justice systems out there are less than stellar, for sure.
Where exactly did you live in Oklahoma? I should probably know this about my husband.
But... Oklahoma City.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Yeah, I lived in a suburb of Oklahoma City for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I was fairly young. I was in elementary school, so I don't have like wild, vivid memories of what it was like the people were like or anything, but I do remember the tornadoes, and the severe weather they have out there is pretty wild. But it's also, Oklahoma's in the Bible Belt. So I do, you know, I went to church and things like that. So it's definitely, I think I went to a Baptist church out there, actually. So it's very religious. There's a lot of churches. It's, you know, kind of, is Oklahoma really the South? I don't know if that's really considered the South. I guess some people consider it the South, but it's not like the deep South.
I've never thought of it.
I mean, Texas, some people say is the South as well. So it's Southern United States in comparison to other states.
Yeah.
But it's a part of the Bible Belt. So if you've ever been to the Bible Belt or live in the Bible Belt, you kind of know what I'm talking about. Just, you know, there's churches everywhere. There's a lot of, most people are religious. Most people, you know, go to church on Sunday. And there's good and bad that comes along with that, right?
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about how Oklahoma is such a dangerous place for members of the LGBTQ community, and how that
played into this case.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And indigenous people as well. Okay, should we just jump in?
Yeah, I'm sure we're starting to confuse people.
Yeah.
But let's just dive into, this is the case of Aubrey Dameron.
So Aubrey Dameron was born on October 22nd, 1993. And like we said, she and her family lived in Grove, Oklahoma. And it's also part of the Cherokee Nation. Now, despite being assigned male at birth, from a young age, Aubrey had always known that she was different. She knew that she didn't feel like the boy that everyone expected her to be. However, it did take her years to learn what it meant to be transgender and really find herself. But when she did, all the pieces sort of, you know, clicked into place for her. And for years, Aubrey had identified as gay, but at 16, she was finally able to acknowledge that she was, in fact, a transgender woman. And the first person that Aubrey came out to was her uncle, Christian Fence. Now, I love Christian.
I did too.
He's just seems like such a good soul. And yeah, we've watched some interview clips with him.
Yeah, you'll see some of him later on, for sure.
Now, Christian is actually her uncle, like we said, but they're only 6 months apart in age, so they are super close. He's more like a brother, you know, best friend to Aubrey than an uncle, and they practically spent every moment together. And Christian was thrilled for Aubrey when she came out. He recalled that Aubrey told him, "I want you to start calling me Aubrey." And at first, Christian was surprised because he had been calling her Shorty for years, which is kind of funny because Aubrey was actually 5'10", almost 5'11", but a bunch of people called her Shorty, and it was just kind of a, you know, term of endearment. I thought that was cute, and she liked having that nickname.
Is it like shoddy?
No,
like the same thing.
No.
No, different term.
I don't know what planet you're on right now.
Every time I hear shorty, I just hear T-Pain in my head. Shoddy.
Okay, no.
But that's a different thing, right? It's not shorty, it's shoddy.
What, do you need a lesson right now?
What's going on?
It is spelled S-H-A-W-T-Y. Yeah,
like my shoddy. That's like a...
I just wasn't sure if shoddy and shorty are the same thing. Because I used to think...
like shorty, like...
like, you my shorty.
Maybe no. Actually, maybe that's what it was.
I'm not
it wasn't
wrong,
because
I know.
She was short. Right. I'm not sure actually where she got that nickname from or why they called her that. But...
listen, shorty first.
Go to Urban Dictionary.
Oh my God, Josh.
Yeah, shoddy.
Okay. According to Google, shoddy is a Southern and African American variant of shorty and can also refer to someone of any gender who is shorter in stature compared to a taller person.
Okay, so...
boom. You just learned something.
No.
No, we don't... no.
Yeah, that's the same
Aubrey's
thing.
Aubrey's tall, so...
okay, this is so irrelevant to this conversation. Anyway, her friends and family called her Shorty, and she did love that nickname. And when Christian asked her if he could still call her Shorty, she said, yes, of course, that's fine, but do not refer to me as my dead name anymore. Not everyone was as supportive of Aubrey's transition as Christian was. Aubrey was bullied really, really badly at school. Oftentimes, other students would mock her, make fun of her, chase her, even throw rocks and sticks at her. Listening to Christian in the interview was really sad, just hearing what they went through, like walking home from school and stuff, just absolutely terrifying. But Aubrey was really strong, even though she had been through all of these things. It was quite impressive to learn about her. And when she came out to her mother, Jennifer Byrd, she was actually immediately like disowned by her. And it has been said that the two of them had gone to therapy and worked through some of their issues. So not really sure.
We don't know like what the state of the relationship was per se when she goes missing, but
I wouldn't definitely wasn't disowned
wasn't
at
like,
that time, but it
wasn't
a great relationship.
Perfect, yeah.
Yeah. Not sure there. But eventually, Aubrey went on Facebook and did share her transition with her followers. She highlighted the hardships that she went through and how ultimately she's happier now. And we actually have a clip from that video.
I'm Aubrey Dameron. It's nice to meet you guys. And for all of you guys out there on Facebook, this video is pertaining to who I am today as a transgendered woman. And how hard the road was to get where I am today. And basically just, you know, to show that there's support out there and that you have a friend and I am one of your friends. Anyways, I've always known since I was a little kid, 8 years later after coming out, or 9 years almost, I mean, I could honestly tell you it's amazing, you know. I am happier as who I am. But, you know, I just thought I would show you the process of how my story came from being at the darkest of my times in my life to being, you know, I'm not as happy as I want to be, you know, but I am happy, you know. And anyhow, it was nice talking to everybody. And this is Aubrey Dameron, and you guys have a blessed day.
So as you can tell, she's super sweet. And overall, most of the comments on this post were positive and supportive of Aubrey. We actually have some overlay on the screen, but she was getting quite a bit of support. According to Christian, Aubrey never wanted anyone to feel, quote, lonely or out of place, and likely because she had often felt that way herself. She was bubbly. She loved to dance, loved to sing, and loved making other people happy. Even when the kids in school would call Aubrey names or try to hurt her, she would tell her family, quote, I'll just pray for them. And that just speaks so much about her character. Aubrey's faith was super important to her and helped keep her strong despite the hardships that she went through. But unfortunately, there were times where the church was not accepting of Aubrey being transgender, which is not super surprising. And at one point, Aubrey was participating in sort of a motivational live stream for other LGBTQ+ teens when she mentioned that she had been chased out of church for being transgender. She said she was even chased with a crowbar. So super scary, but still she never let anything that she went through bring her down and never let it scare her into not being her true self. But no matter how rough the community had been on Aubrey, she always remained a ray of sunshine for those in her life.
And as Aubrey openly explored her trans identity, she began referring to herself as Two-Spirit. Now, this was something I was not familiar with before this episode, but I find the history of this term to be very interesting and honestly eye-opening.
Me too. I had no idea about this. It's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, our schools don't go into great detail when it comes to Native American history. We often only hear one side of history. Mm-hmm. And so any chance I get to dive into the real, true Native American history and culture, I'm just always so interested and fascinated by their beliefs. I just personally, I find Native American culture to be extremely beautiful and deep. And it saddens me that it is not at the forefront of everything that we do. And the education that we get just does not do it justice whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like there's so much good to be learned from Native American history and Native American culture that could make society so much better.
Yeah. Oh, totally. So much wisdom.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the term Two-Spirit was created in the 1990s. However, the term or the history of this term is much older than that. Native American history is often split into pre-contact and post-contact, and this is referring to the interactions of indigenous tribes with explorers from across the sea. Before contact with these explorers, many Native tribes had a specific word that referred to what we now call transgender people. Though the word was different among tribes, it always translated back to something that insinuated that a person lived in a way that was beyond the scope of what was expected for the body in which they were born, which is a very deep concept. You definitely have to think deeply and to fully understand it, which I love. But these people did not live by the confines of what we now call gender. In fact, the concept of gender among the tribes was far different than what we see in modern society. So those who, quote unquote, behaved outside of what we now see as gender norms weren't ostracized. They were considered something special, in fact, and sometimes even holy. Those assigned male at birth who dressed in, quote, female clothes and enjoyed, quote, feminine tasks, and those assigned female at birth who dressed in, quote, male outfits and performed, quote, masculine tasks were typically respected in their tribes. They often served as mediators and matchmakers, and these people were allowed to travel into private male and female spaces interchangeably and would share messages across those boundaries, which helped keep the peace. Two-Spirit people held very special positions in many tribes. For example, in the Sioux tribe, it wasn't a simple thing to call for war. If the war chief wanted to go to battle, first they must hold counsel with a Wingte, which is the tribe's historical term for a Two-Spirit person. This Two-Spirit person would listen to the war chief's proposal and consider all the information at hand before approving or denying the act of war. On the night before the battle, the warriors would perform a dance for the Two-Spirit person and try to impress them enough to be chosen to have sexual relations. It was thought that being chosen by a Two-Spirit person meant that you would take some of their powerful spirit with you into battle. And throughout Native American history, we can see many examples of Two-Spirit people acting as warriors, medicine people, and leading important celebrations for their tribes. We have a couple examples here for you. I'm not going to try to pronounce some of these names because I will just butcher them. But if you're interested, definitely take a look at the video because we'll put it up here on the screen for you to look at. But there's many, many examples of Two-Spirit individuals. The concept of being two-spirited had no implications on sexuality, which is very important. If a man married a Two-Spirit person who is assigned male at birth, that was not considered a gay relationship. The concept of modern gender binary was introduced by European explorers sometime in the 1500s. In the 16th century, Spanish conquistador Vasco Núñez de Balboa discovered a tribe of indigenous people around modern-day Panama. Within this tribe, he found that many of their Two-Spirit people were married to men. To Balboa, he saw this as sacrilegious relationships, so he actually ordered that all these Two-Spirit people and their spouses be killed. As time went on, missionaries to both North and South America continued to kill Two-Spirit people by horrific methods, including sicking their dogs on them. And again, this was all in the name of their religion. So absolutely no respect for the Native people's religion or their beliefs and what they had been doing for thousands of years. They just came in, they're like, our religion's correct. Everything else is an abomination. As Indigenous children were forced into religious schools by European settlers, the concept of gender identification and sexuality was taught, and two-spirited people became less and less accepted in Indigenous communities over time. And as we all know, currently crimes against two-spirit people and other Indigenous members of the LGBTQ plus community continue to grow, and the violence comes from both in and out of the tribes. Crimes against gay and trans people are a problem all around the world, as we know, and we see every day, sadly, but it can feel especially dangerous in the zone in our country known as the Bible Belt, which most of us are familiar with this section of the country known as the Bible Belt. It makes up the southern and midwestern United States, where Protestant Christian values greatly shape the culture and laws. The Bible Belt includes parts of Florida and Texas, along with a handful of other states, and most important to Aubrey's case, it includes Oklahoma. Oklahoma has been recognized for years as generally an unsafe place for LGBTQ plus citizens. The 2015 U.S. Transgender Survey found that nearly 30% of respondents from the state of Oklahoma reported that in the prior year, they had been denied a job, fired from a job, or denied a promotion on the basis of their gender expression. Which, how does that have anything to do with what kind of employee you are?
Isn't it really sad to think about how backwards we have gone?
Yeah.
Like, to look back at history and see that transgender people were considered to be so highly regarded and special. And now, I mean, there's just like more hate than ever. It's truly mind-blowing. And this is why it would be so interesting to teach more of this history in school.
Right.
And open, I mean, we need it more than ever to open people's eyes, especially those who think it's just, you know, it's this new like trendy thing to be transgender. And it's like coming out of nowhere when there's a long history.
And it goes back even further than that. I mean, you could probably go back all the way to ancient.
Oh, you can.
Probably to the Sumerians if you really dug into it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And ancient Egypt and other places.
If we had more education on it, maybe there would be more understanding. I don't know. Sometimes it feels kind of hopeless, but.
Well, yeah, as they always say, it's a nation based on Christian values. So it's like, you know, they go back to the founding fathers, and that's where a lot of things really got messed up, if you ask me. But anyways, the same survey found that 15% of transgender respondents in Oklahoma also experienced housing discrimination, and 25% experienced mistreatment in places of public establishments based on their gender identity, which included acts of physical violence. And sadly, as time goes on, the violence toward LGBTQ plus citizens in Oklahoma does not seem to be decreasing. And when you hear these Oklahoma politicians speak, it is no surprise as to why this happens, because they're fueling. I mean, people are saying their own political leaders and people in power spreading all this hate.
Yep.
And so people support it.
Each year, something called safehome.org actually completes detailed safety ratings of each state for people of a wide variety of demographics. And each state is actually ranked from 0 to 100, 100 being a perfect score and is considered a great place for LGBTQ plus citizens to live. So in the most recent evaluation from 2023, Oklahoma earned a safety score of 9.9 out of 100, ranking 47th among, they also include DC, so it's 51, making it the fifth most dangerous state in the country for LGBTQ plus citizens. And if you're watching, we'll put up some stuff here. There's like this map that kind of shows the different states and how they're ranked. And if you look at the Bible Belt, it's like all deep purple, which is on this map shown as, you know, unsafe.
With what's the worst, according to this?
The worst is Mississippi. The best is California.
Followed by Maine.
Yeah, so like the top five are California, Maine, District of Columbia, New York, and New Jersey. And Colorado is actually six, which I was happy to see.
Yep.
And the worst ones are Oklahoma, Louisiana, Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi.
I'm curious to hear from our subscribers out there that are from those states and see if you've noticed that, which I'm sure you do. Maybe you can share some of your experiences with us. Be interesting to hear.
I mean, Mississippi does not surprise me at all.
No.
That state hates everybody, it seems like. I mean, my God.
Yeah, everything we've gone down there twice now to work on documentaries.
That place scares me, honestly.
It scares me too.
and we are.
It's the most white lawless. Yeah, yeah, it's the most lawless, corrupted state I've ever seen before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really bad. I definitely would not feel safe there as a person of color or a person who is in the LGBTQ community.
It's disappointing to see Tennessee, though. I feel like hopefully they're going in the right direction. Again, I think it's a lot of it's rooted in just history and politics, obviously, is a big part of this as well. But you would think with somewhere like Nashville, which Nashville's really kind of over time, I feel like is progressing as a city and it's expanding. It's one of the top growing cities in the United States. And I hope that, you know, obviously you leave Nashville, well, you go to Knoxville or somewhere else. It's obviously a very different experience. Doesn't have quite that same feel, but I hope Tennessee can open their minds a bit.
It's always the cities that you know, are a little bit better and
more progressive.
Yeah. Colorado used to be more conservative as well. And then Denver was always more progressive. But over time, as the city's grown and people have spread out, it, you know, has expanded more of a progressive attitude across the state, I think. So,
well, what's interesting to me is like maybe. You've got somewhere like Utah that's up here at 24.
Yeah,
that's, and you would, I'm surprised by that as well, because I mean, a heavily religious place like Utah, and maybe that speaks to Mormons.
One of my best friends has family in Utah, and she's always like, no, it's actually, from what she could tell, you know, it seemed like it's actually a semi-progressive state, especially like Salt Lake City.
Yeah. Well, it's like right there in the middle.
Yeah.
24.
So I don't know. I mean, again, someone from Utah, give us your experience, but yeah.
So as we said, Aubrey wasn't just in danger due to her gender identity. She was also in danger because she was an Indigenous person in Oklahoma, where the overall violent death rate among Native Americans is approximately 17% higher than the rate among non-Natives. But let's get back to talking about Aubrey here. After Aubrey graduated from high school, she enrolled in Grove Beauty School. And then after that, she started working at several different fast food places, including McDonald's. And shortly after, Aubrey decided to leave her home and move to New Mexico with her boyfriend, Jay Pearson. Now, there isn't that much known about Jay. It's kind of a dicey situation. Jay and Aubrey met in Oklahoma, and they hadn't been together long before the two of them moved to New Mexico. And in photos, the two of them appear to be happy and in love, but there was definitely a darker truth behind the surface. And it turns out Aubrey was incredibly unhappy in her relationship with Jay. She told Pam and Christian that it was toxic, and during the time she was with Jay, it seemed like Aubrey began abusing alcohol and drugs. In 2018, she made the choice to return to Grove and seek treatment for her addictions, but Aubrey still had reservations about moving back to Grove, of course. At one point, she actually told her aunt Pam that she thought she should return to New Mexico to be with Jay. According to Aubrey, this was because Jay told her that if she ever left him after, quote, everything he had done for her, that he would kill her. But Pam was able to convince Aubrey to stay in Grove. She told her that what the two of them had was not love, because someone who loves Aubrey would never speak to her that way. So Aubrey decided not to go back to New Mexico. She moved back in with her mother, Jennifer, and her mother's boyfriend, Mike. Now, at the time, Christian and Pam thought this was the best thing for her, but unfortunately, things were about to change for the worse. On Saturday, March 16th, 2019, Pam was sent a Facebook screenshot from one of her friends. And the screenshot was a Facebook post made by one of Aubrey's friends. The post claimed that Aubrey was missing and that if anyone had seen her, they needed to call Aubrey's mom, Jennifer. Now, Pam immediately thought it was strange that this was the first that she had heard about Aubrey being missing. She called the local police in Grove, who informed her that she needed to contact the Delaware County Sheriff's Office instead. Pam then spoke with a woman who told her that Aubrey had been reported missing but refused to share any details. Instead, she tells her to call Aubrey's mom, Jennifer, for information and just ended the phone call. So Pam and Christian went ahead and called Jennifer, and Jennifer told them that the last time she saw Aubrey was on March 9th, 2019, at a little past 3 a.m. During this call, Jennifer claimed that she got up to use the restroom and looked down the hall and saw that Aubrey was leaving. Aubrey allegedly told Jennifer that she would be back later, but didn't specify where she was going. Pam and Christian then discovered that Jennifer waited 48 hours before reporting Aubrey missing, and that Aubrey had been missing a week before the two of them had been informed, despite the fact that they were really, really close with Aubrey.
This is very sketchy.
Yeah.
Super sketchy to me.
I mean, Jennifer and Mike are just incredibly sketchy.
Like, why wouldn't you tell the whole family that she's been missing right away?
And it seemed like Jennifer had no intention of ever telling them at all if they didn't get in touch with her. So Aubrey's phone was last pinged a few hundred yards from her mom's house at a mobile home park around 3:30 a.m.
Typically, Christian and Aubrey would see each other or talk on the phone practically every day. However, in the weeks leading up to her disappearance, Aubrey had become more isolated, according to Christian. She and Christian only talked once every week or two, and they barely saw each other in person. Christian didn't know what was going on with Aubrey, so when she invited him over to hang out on the night of March 8th, he was thrilled. Christian said that when he arrived, he thought that he and Aubrey were going to discuss what was wrong and why she had been avoiding him. However, the night was just like any other the two spent together. They laughed, they watched cheesy movies, and just had fun in each other's company. Christian had no way of knowing that night would be the last time that he would ever see Aubrey.
God, it really broke my heart in his interviews when he was talking about how that night, like, you know, he had gone over it in his head so many times trying to see if there was anything that seemed out of the ordinary. But to him, it was like a perfect night. And he actually used the term, it was almost like a perfect send-off.
Yeah.
It just made me so sad.
It's really, really hard to hear. So when Christian and Pam found out about their niece's disappearance through word of mouth, they were instantly suspicious, as are all of us, of Jennifer Byrd. When Christian and Pam asked why Jennifer seemed to have such a lack of urgency regarding Aubrey's disappearance, she simply told them that, oh, well, Aubrey often skips town for a week or two at a time and eventually comes back. And this raised some red flags for Christian and Pam, as they weren't familiar with Aubrey skipping town for long periods of time. But if she did, why did Jennifer report her missing after 2 days? Still, local police believed this theory, and one detective told Pam that he was certain that Aubrey and her mother had gotten into an argument and that Aubrey just needed a, quote, cooling off period. Pretty confident thing to say. I wonder what evidence that's based off of. Probably none. But more days passed without any signs from Aubrey, so Pam called the police again. This time, she was transferred to the captain in charge of the case and quickly realized that they weren't taking Aubrey's case seriously whatsoever. The captain repeatedly misgendered and deadnamed Aubrey before telling Pam, quote, we don't believe he is a missing person. Pam was shocked that this is all the captain had to say, but the captain also said he believed that Aubrey was missing, quote, because of his lifestyle. So that, I mean, that tells you everything you need to know.
It's just so disrespectful. You should honestly lose your job for something like that.
You're just you're terrible at your job if you're saying those types of excuses to potential victims of crimes family members. Like, what on earth?
Yeah. I mean, these are her loved ones you're talking to, and you're going to continually, purposely, I think, in my opinion, say he. I mean, it's just...
Well, yeah, that's the first problem right there. Mm-hmm. Just no respect.
No respect at all.
But then to be like, well, something bad happened to you because of your lifestyle choices.
Yeah, he actually said that because she did drugs, that she, she was around undesirables, was the term that he used.
Oh, well.
It brings you in contact with undesirables.
This happens way too much.
Yeah.
Just because you have done maybe a few things you're not proud of, if something happens to you, mm-hmm. that just means the police aren't going to help you.
Yeah. I mean,
you're going to be treated differently than from somebody who is, in the police's eyes, an upstanding citizen.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad that even exists in society today. But it's the reality. And obviously, because Aubrey was trans, had a history of substance abuse, you know, the local sheriff's office is, you know, going to be like, well, we got bigger, better things to worry about. You know, this is kind of at the low end of our priority list here, which is very sad. And ultimately, her life just wasn't worth searching for, despite what an amazing person she was and how much light and positivity she spread throughout her community and the rest of the world. But there's also another theory being spread around the town, and this was that Aubrey had detransitioned and then left to start a life again as a man.
Ridiculous.
Which, of course, that's going to be a theory.
Mm-hmm.
But her uncle Christian knew this wasn't true. Not only was Aubrey incredibly confident in her identity as a woman, but there was a serious flaw in this theory. Aubrey was epileptic and her medication had been left at home. So there was no way that Aubrey, A, was going to leave in the middle of the night. Who, like, to leave it at 3:30 in the morning and just leave for 2 weeks? No, you know, somebody who's epileptic is not going to leave without their medication. At the very least, they're going to bring that with them, because mm-hmm. how are they supposed to be able to function
right
without that medication? I mean, that's just a dead giveaway. Additionally, family was the most important thing to Aubrey, which is why she worked to forgive her mother, despite how awful she was to her when she first came out at 16. And those who were close to her knew that the last thing she would do is just randomly get up and leave her family without saying goodbye to them first. A few weeks after Aubrey went missing, a woman named Dee Robotham came forward, and she claimed that Aubrey was being held by someone for a drug debt and that Aubrey wouldn't be released until the debt was paid. That, to me, when I first heard that, I was like, I'm not, that's very sketchy sounding, doesn't it? Sounds very scammy.
Oh,
like.
Yeah, totally.
And once Pam heard this, she immediately contacted Aubrey's ex, Jay, and Jay shared screenshots with Pam of a conversation he had had over text with Dee. The screenshots show that Dee had also told Jay that Aubrey's being held on a drug debt and had asked him to send her, Dee, money so Aubrey could be released. And we have some screenshots of those texts, so you can take a look at those. But all communications with Dee were being made through Jay. As this was happening, other individuals also told Pam and Christian that they heard Aubrey was being held on a drug debt as well. With that, Pam and Christian began believing maybe there's some validity to this story. However, as they dove into this a bit more, red flags began to fly. First of all, Dee couldn't tell them how much money Aubrey owed or who had Aubrey. She literally couldn't give any details whatsoever. When you look at these texts, you're just like, this is so sketchy. Christian and Pam encouraged Jay to inform the police about the interaction, and eventually he did. And the police actually ended up arresting Dee and charging her with extortion. But her case never went to trial. And in 2021, her charges were dismissed without explanation to Aubrey's family. So who even knows what happened there? All very sketchy, though.
So given the circumstances, Pam and Christian were definitely starting to feel, you know, pretty hopeless about the situation. Didn't feel like there was anyone to turn to or anyone that was really going to help them. And really, what are they able to do without, you know, the resources that law enforcement have and without Jennifer coming forward? I mean, it just felt like they were stuck.
Ever tried to break a bad habit and felt like you're climbing Everest in flip-flops? Yeah, we've all been there, right? But here's a breath of fresh air. Fume. It's not about giving up, it's about switching up. And Fume takes your habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that does just that. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors. My favorite flavor is the crisp mint. I love mint, and the crisp mint is amazing for that inhale right when I wake up. It really gets me going. Instead of bad, Fume is a good habit. It's a habit you're free to enjoy and makes replacing your bad habit easy. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which is helpful for de-stressing and anxiety while breaking your habit. I will admit, I was a little bit skeptical about flavored air, but the first time I tried it, I tried that crisp mint, it was much more flavorful than I thought. It's the taste is a lot like a herbal tea. The flavor is actually a lot more potent than you would really imagine. The Fume's feel is well-weighted, it's perfectly balanced and extremely fun to fidget with, and the look of it is honestly pretty amazing. You can tell they've spent a lot of time designing this thing. It's made with real wood. It's very beautiful to look at. I mean, most people wouldn't even really be able to tell what it is, so it's very discreet. You can take it wherever, and I mean, it's just air, so you know nobody's going to give you any issues with it. In fact, people probably just ask you what it is, and then you can tell them all about Fume. And you really do feel cool using it. You know, it reminds you a lot of those other devices you might use, but Fume is actually good for you. Plus, Fume just released a magnetic stand for your Fume, so there's no more losing it around the house, and it's built with fidgeting in mind as well, so you can spin your Fume around on it. So it's a great device that tackles a bunch of different habits and you can get one today. Start the year off right with the good habit by going to tryfume.com/milehigher and getting the journey pack today. Fume is giving listeners of the show 10% off when you use our code MILEHIGHER to help make starting the good habit that much easier.
But just as they were beginning to lose hope, they luckily were contacted by a search and rescue expert named Brian Guevara. And Brian had heard of Aubrey's case through social media and just knew that he needed to help this family. So he began putting together searches with volunteers from the community. He began the process of searching for Aubrey, and they also began to notice even more strange behavior from Jennifer. And that's because as the searches began, Christian asked Jennifer if she remembered what her daughter was wearing the night she disappeared. And Jennifer told them that Aubrey was wearing a black jacket, a black top, a black skirt, black pantyhose, and black boots as well. And it didn't take the search party long to find a black boot lying in the ditch directly in front of Jennifer's home, which is pretty mind-blowing to think about for so many reasons. But to me, what immediately jumps out is this was in front of her home. Her daughter is missing. You could have walked outside and just taken a look around. Like, how is that missed? What the fuck?
Well, it just tells you they didn't even try.
No.
They purposely did not go out and look for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
What that reason is, we don't know, but very sketchy.
Yeah. So the search group then immediately contacted the police to have them come and retrieve the boot. But when they arrived, Jennifer told the police that Aubrey wasn't wearing black boots suddenly that night. In fact, she had been wearing house shoes, as she said. Christian asked her why she originally said that Aubrey was wearing boots, and Jennifer's only explanation was, quote, "My bad, I shouldn't have said that."
Why aren't the police, like, trying to get to the bottom of what's going on here?
Well, they're just, like, buying this at face value.
Oh, you forgot? Okay, no problem.
Yeah, because they don't give a shit, dude.
It's like,
they don't care. That's the reality. In so many other cases, they would immediately take note of that and take an action.
Like, you know, let's interview you and figure out what the story is.
Right. That's incredibly weird.
That just doesn't happen.
Mm-mm. So then on March 23rd, 2019, a search party found a sock a half a mile from Jennifer's driveway that seemed to be stained with blood. Super scary. And the police, again, were notified, but after taking the sock and testing it for DNA, the family was told that the tests were inconclusive. Super frustrating. And hope is really starting to fade at this point, so Brian began putting together more intense search teams. There was a sonar team to check bodies of water near the area and a standard search team that meticulously walked the bank of each nearby body of water. And additionally, they brought in canines, which is when the suspicions about Jennifer really started to grow even more, because the cadaver dogs got a hit on a shed on the property, along with a kiddie pool near the shed that was covered in a suspiciously stained tarp. So that's very scary and not looking good. Later, the search dogs also got a hit on a bank of a pond just at the end of Jennifer's driveway. And they dredged the pond, but no evidence related to Aubrey was located. During the time of the searches taking place, a new tip ended up coming to police. A person claimed to see Aubrey resting on a hill next to a flagpole just a few miles away in Kenwood, Oklahoma. So Christian formed a search party to go to Kenwood, and they began searching the area. Now, they quickly located a black jacket among the trees that matched the description of the jacket that Jennifer said Aubrey was wearing the night she went missing. There was also a section of ground that appeared to be disturbed, as if someone was doing some digging. And when Christian returned to town with the news of this discovery, Jennifer told him, quote, "Aubrey wasn't wearing a jacket when she left." Now, obviously, this is completely contradictory to the description that she had originally provided both Christian and Pam. So what the fuck?
Yeah, this is all very weird to me, because they, you know, Christian gets this tip. He goes out to Kenwood, and you look at the photo here of this area where this black jacket is found. The ground definitely, you can tell, has been disturbed in one way or another. It almost looks like somebody had dug like a little trench or something here, and then the ground had been put back potentially. It's hard to say, but I don't think anything ever came from this whatsoever. Like, I don't think they even confirmed the jacket was hers. It was just, it all goes back to Jennifer just being like, oh yeah, she wasn't wearing a jacket. So then the potential evidence is just dismissed, or maybe they did give it to police and they just never heard back from it.
I mean, how hard is it to confirm whether or not that was hers too? I mean, maybe it's harder than
it could
you
be,
think, but
yeah, it could be difficult. But I don't think we're even able to find any information on what happened with that jacket and if it was ever tested or anything like that. I assume it was just either turned in or just completely dismissed altogether.
It's confusing too to think about the fact that someone saw her resting next to a flagpole in this area and then they find this jacket. Like, what exactly does that mean?
Could the jacket be planted?
I don't know.
Could somebody have like tried to send them on a wild goose chase
and it's like
led them out there to this area? Because I find it really weird and suspicious that of course they find this jacket next to this like disturbed area of ground.
But if that's the case, why would Jennifer then say, oh, she wasn't wearing a jacket? Like if they had some plan or they're working with someone.
Yeah, true.
Or maybe it's someone, maybe it's not Jennifer. I don't know. I mean, there's more we have to get into. But it's certainly weird. Because obviously there are theories out there. And this is possible that Aubrey did just leave and went and start a new life. Of course, it's possible. In our opinions, it's very unlikely. And, you know, Christian has said, I would love to believe that she's chosen to leave and she's off happy and completely fine. It just doesn't make any sense because that's just not the type of person that she was. She loved her family so much. But of course, it would be the best case scenario that she is out there and that she is alive. It just doesn't seem likely. But there have been many sightings of her. We'll get to some of that. But this Kenwood situation is weird that they get this tip that she's sighted. They go there and then they find this jacket. I mean, what are the chances?
Well, and why aren't the police going out there?
Because they don't give a shit.
Like
they don't care. It's just, sorry, I'm repeating myself, but it's so frustrating. It's just so frustrating.
Yeah, the fact that the family members have to go out there and investigate this tip themselves is just disappointing.
Like so many families out there do. Because if you don't, who's going to?
Because, I mean, maybe more would have came of this discovery had they actually taken it seriously. Well, I think it also is because of what happens next here. So as hopes of finding Aubrey begin to fade, the Delaware County Sheriff's Office ended up handing over the case to the Cherokee Nation Marshal Service. The Cherokee Nation Marshal, Shannon Buell, received the case in July of 2020, and Shannon took the case very personally. In the Cherokee Nation's culture, anyone who's a member is considered to be family. So to Shannon, Aubrey was like his own sister who had gone missing, and he felt that her story, her case, and her life were important. The investigation into Aubrey is a little different for the Cherokee Nation Marshals because they investigated all missing persons cases as homicides until they could prove it wasn't, which I love this very aggressive approach. Because it really does prevent you from overlooking crucial evidence that other departments and agencies often ignore or may ignore. The more Shannon looked at the facts of Aubrey's case, the changing statements of her mother, the lack of cooperation from a few key individuals, and the general way that the community had treated Aubrey, he saw this as more than a missing persons case. He saw a potential hate crime, which the potential for a hate crime had always been in the back of minds of everyone searching for Aubrey. And as the searches for her went on, her family and friends began attending murdered and missing Indigenous woman events where pictures of Aubrey could be shared. And the hopes were that it would keep Aubrey's case alive and that maybe someday they'd bring her home or find out what happened to her. Events for MMIW are incredibly important, especially in places like Oklahoma. Because according to the National Crime Information Center, as of 2016, more than 5,700 American Native and Alaskan Native women and girls have gone missing in the United States. Shockingly, only 116 of those cases are listed by the U.S. Department of Justice Missing Persons Database. And this is something that we've touched on before in the past, especially when covering the murder of Kaycera Stops Pretty Places. And also transgender murders almost doubled between 2017 and 2021. These statistics paired with Aubrey's trans identity and the increase in violence towards trans women made a strong argument that Aubrey was killed for simply who she is. When Aubrey returned to Oklahoma from New Mexico, she had received top surgery, and it drastically changed her appearance and caught the attention of bigots living in Grove.
According to Pam, people just stopped accepting her. Here is Christian speaking more on why he believes Aubrey's case is not being taken as seriously as it should be.
Christian says Aubrey's case is being ignored because of her sexual identification and her culture.
It's been shown time and time again in both the transgender community as well as in the Native American community where these cases, they're not covered, they're not looked into because over and over again, their lifestyle is being brought up.
According to the Human Rights Campaign Foundation, only 20 states have laws that investigate hate crimes based on gender identity. Oklahoma is not one of those states.
Christian also believes that it would have been very easy for someone to lure Aubrey out of her home under false pretenses, because it is known that Aubrey did use social media and dating apps to meet new people. The tactic of baiting trans and queer individuals on dating apps is not unheard of. There have been multiple cases where bigots intentionally use queer dating spaces to find and assault individuals. Other times, a person who hasn't come out publicly might use these apps and then turn to violence after they have had a romantic encounter with that individual. However, Cherokee Marshall Shannon Buell believes that Aubrey may have been harmed by someone she knows.
So when Shannon initially began investigating Aubrey's case, the original story was that Aubrey was last seen standing at the end of her mother's driveway. However, the story changed over time. Originally, Jennifer said her boyfriend Mike was asleep when Aubrey left the home at 3 a.m. Later, they said that Mike was the one who saw Aubrey walk to the end of their driveway. Later, Shannon was told that Aubrey's brother was there and watched her leave the house. But after some time, the story changed to the brother following Aubrey outside. It seemed that none of the people in Aubrey's home could keep their story straight. So major red flags going up like crazy there. And when Shannon looked deeper into the history of the case, another extremely disturbing detail came to light. Mike, Jennifer's boyfriend, admitted to killing Aubrey. What Shannon learned from Pam and Christian is that in April of 2019, they were in contact with a private investigator. And at some point in April, Jennifer called that private investigator to let them know that her boyfriend, Mike, had admitted that he was the one who killed Aubrey. Pam immediately called the police captain on Aubrey's case, and the captain went to Jennifer's house, but Mike wasn't there. And according to Jennifer, he had fled the home and was intoxicated. The police found Mike and arrested him for driving under the influence, and they questioned him in regards to his statement to Jennifer, but he denied making the confession. So the police re-questioned Jennifer, and she denied ever telling the private investigator that Mike had confessed to murdering Aubrey. After that event, Pam and Christian claim that Jennifer has repeatedly made this claim that Mike killed Aubrey. However, each time they went to the police, Jennifer walked back her statements. And I mean, that just says it all right there. No one just willy-nilly says something like that. And of course, we don't have proof that she said these things. But I mean, why would Pam and Christian say that this has happened multiple times? And why would you ever say something like that unless there was truth to it?
I'm always happy to talk about one of our longtime sponsors here at MileHigher, Stamps.com. We've been using Stamps.com for probably 5 years now, whether it's shipping merch, shipping Higher Love, or even just Amazon packages or packages to our family and friends. Stamps.com has saved us thousands and thousands of dollars over the years. And not only that, it's made our lives so much easier because our shipping needs are way beyond the hours of the post office. I mean, the post office, love them. Great establishment, but could use some upgrades, I'd say. Hours is one of them. Hours at the post office are always hard to find the time. Then you go, and oftentimes there's a line out the door, but stamps.com allows you to do everything the post office can do, and now even UPS, right from the comfort of your home or office, and all you need is a computer and a printer, and you're good to go. You can even schedule a pickup for those carriers through the stamps.com dashboard. It really is that simple. And stamps.com will give you rates you can't find anywhere else, like up to 89% off USPS and UPS shipping options. And they'll even tell you what the cheapest and fastest shipping options are, so you don't have to navigate all of the different carriers. Stamps.com also seamlessly connects with every major marketplace and shopping cart. So if you run an online store, Etsy shop, whatever it may be, stamps.com will seamlessly connect in, and you can utilize their services and take advantage of those discounts. Keep your mailing and shipping moving at the speed of your business with stamps.com. Sign up with promo code MileHigher for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale, which you need for mailing and shipping packages. Best of all, there's no long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code MILEHIGHER.
And even without these very strange retracted admissions of guilt, Jennifer and Mike look incredibly suspicious in this case. Pam and Christian have had to lead the entire search effort. They've never gotten involved in anything. They don't seem to care. They haven't helped with any of the searches, even the searches on their own property. They just would simply close the blinds and stay in their house. I mean, it says it all, dude. It's so obvious.
Yeah, it's just sad.
It's incredibly sad.
That this is so clearly solvable if you actually did an investigation and interviewed these two.
This should be a slam dunk. It's so obvious. God, this is her mother. And they haven't even handed out flyers. They haven't worked on the Find Aubrey Facebook page at all. They haven't even acted as if they're even remotely concerned about Aubrey at all. In fact, 2 weeks after Aubrey went missing, Christian went into Aubrey's bedroom to search for clues. And what he found was that Jennifer and Mike had already completely packed up her room. It was like they didn't even care about her at all. Or worse, maybe they were trying to hide something. And Jennifer has said that she believes that Aubrey has passed away. She made this super weird statement. It's like the only statement she's ever made. I think she says that
like
in the clip.
Like two cameras, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It'll give you very weird vibes immediately. Let's take a look.
It's me and Aubrey.
You were the last person to see her.
They're the first camera crew that I'm ever speaking to.
She says she has no idea what happened to her daughter, but does believe she's dead.
I felt my child pass a year ago. When a mother and a child has a bond, and I felt it. I hit the floor.
Aubrey's mom also telling us the family hasn't gotten the help from investigators they were hoping for.
Is there anybody at the department who can speak on the Aubrey Dameron case? Any media inquiry contacts?
Not in this office.
So make of that what you will. I mean, no, it's such a slap in the face to Christian and Pam too, for her to be like, oh yeah, I hit the floor when I felt that she had passed. Okay, so you're that upset, but when people are searching, you're going to hide in your house with your blinds down?
Yeah, and what's up with the delay in her going missing and not reporting it?
I mean, there's so many things.
The story changing so many times says so much. I don't know. Again, we're not accusing anybody of anything.
Yes, of course, allegedly.
Right. In our opinion.
Now, of course, we have to say this. Regardless of the fact that Jennifer, Mike, and Jay all seem to be very suspicious, it's still important to recognize that Aubrey did sadly have a history of substance abuse. And this is something that Cherokee Nation marshals do have to keep in mind. Is it possible that Aubrey left her home that night and died of a drug overdose? Of course, yes, it's possible. It is also possible that Aubrey may have committed suicide. After all, as we know, we've talked about so many times, it isn't always apparent when someone is suicidal, and the rate of suicide is a lot higher in the LGBTQ+ community. However, it's important to note that nobody has come forward saying that they witnessed her doing drugs that night. And while the suicide theory is possible, it's not very likely because no body has ever been discovered. And in a town as small as Grove, even though it has, you know, more rural wooded areas, you'd expect to have at least some evidence of Aubrey found at some point if she actually did take her own life. So in my opinion, those two theories, just there's such a small chance.
Yeah, agreed. I think there is a possibility she could have gone somewhere where she may not have been found, because there is, this area has tons of lakes, actually. So in Grove, Oklahoma, there's this massive lake there called Grand Lake O, the Cherokees. And this lake is 67 miles long.
Wow.
So there is quite a bit of water, and that could also, you know, lead to more credibility to the murdered theory, but it could also lead to she could have gone somewhere in this massive area that she just hasn't been found yet, either taken her own life or died of an overdose or something like that. But
yeah, it's possible.
But again, the sheriff did say they did do lots of searches. They dredged some ponds and some other lakes, and they haven't found anything. So I think you just have to take that into consideration. But again, I feel like something would have been found, but then again, they really haven't done that much searching, right? The authorities. So no. It's really hard to say. And the reality is there's no official statement taken from Jennifer to prove that she claimed Aubrey was wearing the all black outfit on the night she went missing. And there's no statement to prove she claimed to be the only one to see Aubrey leave. The lack of urgency in the case has created an inability to know what is real and what is not.
Yep.
Which sucks. This is a problem found in many cases of missing adults, especially missing people of color. Delaware County Sheriff's Office has said that there has been reported sightings of her in several casinos and retail stores in both parts of Oklahoma and Missouri. However, all these sightings have not been confirmed as Aubrey. And we'll show you a clip so you just get an idea of what we're dealing with out there in Delaware County. Here's Captain Gail Wells being asked by reporters about what they've been doing in regards to Aubrey's case.
Coming up on leads. We've had numerous sightings of Aubrey in casinos in the Missouri and Oklahoma.
They've also included sightings at retail stores, but each turned out to be nothing.
Let's slip and fall here.
Investigators even searched a pond near Aubrey's home, more false hope of her whereabouts.
We ran drag lines horizontally and vertically on the pond, and then we actually put divers in the pond with large rakes to rake the bottom of the pond and found nothing.
I mean, the word
police only know this about the case,
that he left home during the early morning hours.
See,
didn't say where he was going, left without his cell phone or without a purse.
So there's that clip we were referring to earlier.
Well, it was a different time, actually. That was that's just how he's always referred to Aubrey.
Yeah. There's multiple clips.
As time passed by with no sign of Aubrey, Christian and Pam turned their focus to changes in the law that could have saved Aubrey or could have led to an arrest in her disappearance. Christian and Pam have also turned to attorney and activist Brenda Golden. Brenda is a Muscogee Creek citizen based in Okmulgee, Oklahoma. And Brenda is very familiar with the lack of urgency in searching for missing adults, especially missing adults of color. Because of this, she is passionate about making changes in the ways that adult missing persons cases are handled. At the time Aubrey went missing, Oklahoma utilized the Amber Alert system for critically missing children. However, there is no option for critically missing adults, people aged 18 to 59 whose whereabouts are unknown or who may have been abducted. Brenda approached Oklahoma House Representative Daniel Pay of Lawton, Oklahoma, with the idea known as the Red Alert. Quickly, they realized they should name the alert after someone, and Aubrey was the obvious choice. In January of 2021, the Aubrey Alert Act was introduced to the Oklahoma House of Representatives. However, Representative Daniel Pay was told by numerous colleagues that despite the popularity of the purpose of the bill in Oklahoma, nobody would pass a bill named after a trans person.
Now, that is truly fucking sad.
Yeah. No other words to describe that.
It would be, doesn't matter who else it was, it would be passed if it wasn't
right.
A trans person.
Well, it wasn't because
it has all
was,
this support.
Right. It wasn't because it was unnecessary or improperly written.
Nope.
Or because of a lack of trust in its request. It was just shot down because Aubrey was going to be the name of it. Someone who is transgender.
Yep.
But kudos to Christian and Pam because, you know, they see the greater good here. And despite that being extremely offensive, they wanted this bill to pass. So, you know, they agreed, you know, it's better that we get this bill passed with another name, if that's what has to happen, than for it to be completely shot down. So the bill was renamed to the Casey Alert Act in honor of Casey Russell, a Cherokee Nation man who was reported missing by his mother. The police refused to take the case seriously, and Casey's body was discovered 6 years later. Get this, less than a quarter mile away from where he was last seen. So, I mean, Aubrey's case is unfortunately just one example of many botched cases involving victims who are indigenous. It's just crazy. In May of 2023, the Casey Alert Act was signed into law, and to this day, Aubrey has not been found, but the Cherokee Marshals continue to work towards discovering what happened to Aubrey and who is responsible for taking such a light from this world. Pam and Christian remember what a wonderful person Aubrey was, and still, Pam and Christian remember what Aubrey would say. She'd say, quote, "You just need to pray." By leaning on their faith, Pam and Christian push forward and do everything they can to keep Aubrey's story and the story of countless Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people alive. The pair attend dozens of MMIW events and maintain a Facebook page that reminds followers of Aubrey's story, along with the stories of other missing Indigenous people, which we'll link all of the Facebook pages below, as well as the other websites and links related to this case for you. There was even a scholarship that was created in Aubrey's name, the Matriarch Aubrey Dameron MMIW Scholarship. And this scholarship is awarded to remind others of the perseverance of Aubrey to complete her high school degree, despite the adversity she faces as a trans girl in a small southern town.
Christian and Pam, they're pretty inspiring. They're confident that someday they will learn what happened to Aubrey. Here's a clip of them talking more on this.
I believe that we will eventually get the answers that we deserve. I believe that someone's going to come forward, the entire thing's just going to blow open.
And until then, the aunt and uncle turned detectives, vow they'll keep digging.
She was my keeper, and now I don't have a keeper, but I push forward.
Used to go to sleep and have my phone turned up as loud as could be, and I'd doze off, and I'd wake up in a panic and be like, did she call? Did somebody call and say they found her?
If she is alive, what would you tell your daughter?
I would tell her that I love her so much. And to come home. Come home to me.
Pam has actually described this experience as, quote, slow death, a nightmare that you just don't wake up from. Aubrey was 25 years old and is described as being 5'10 and weighing around 150 pounds at the time of her disappearance. She also has brown hair and brown eyes and multiple tattoos. She has a tattoo of a Traquetra. I never heard that, but I have seen that symbol before. It's on the backside of her neck. It's an ancient symbol that consists of three overlapping interconnected arcs. She also has a circle design tattoo with the word shorty on her left shoulder and tattoos on both hips. Her DNA profile is in databases for OSBI, the National Crime Information Center, and the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. If you have any information about the disappearance of Aubrey Dameron, please call the FBI at 918-664-3300 or the Cherokee Nation Marshal Service at 918-207-3800.
Yeah, I'll just say that we didn't mention anything else about the FBI because there really is, we have no updates from them. News Nation tried to reach out to the special agent that's assigned to this case, hasn't heard back. We just have no idea even what's going on from the FBI's front. Obviously, they're involved because this is potentially a hate crime, but there's virtually been no release or of information from law enforcement or anything like that as to what the status is. It seems like everything's just kind of in a holding pattern. And obviously, the Cherokee Marshals are seeking tips and more information to try to get further down the road with this case. But yeah, it's a frustrating one for sure.
It's incredibly sad.
Because I believe there are people that know more about what happened to her, that know more about the events of that night.
I do too.
That just haven't come forward. And police haven't really pressed, you know, Delaware County Sheriff's Office didn't really do anything to try to figure out what the true events were that night she went missing. And then just passed it over to the Cherokee Marshals and they're trying to pick up where they left off. And, you know, I think there's some differences in the way that they investigate and what they're able to do. So I really hope that the FBI can help them get this figured out, because this one seems like there's an answer to what happened.
I just hope it's not too late, you know, with the mistakes that were made, pretty crucial mistakes and just lack of care that was put in right off the bat, and so continues to this day. So yeah, it's incredibly sad and frustrating.
I think when looking at all the theories, I think only one really makes sense, unfortunately. And based on everything that she was going through and the way she was being treated by those in the community, even family members, it seems like she, unfortunately, at this point is likely not still.
Yeah, I would agree.
Alive, but
I agree with Christian when he said, you know, it'd be great to think that she's out there living this happy life and is okay, but it's extremely unlikely. And obviously, I just keep going back to her mother making the statement that Mike killed her multiple times.
Yeah, right.
And, like,
I mean,
obviously, we don't have record of that. We don't know.
Why would
he
say that?
Yeah. And I don't think Christian and Pam would make that up.
No.
I mean, you don't just casually say something like that.
That's something that the authorities should have jumped on and try to get to the bottom of.
And just, like, in what world would you stay inside your home with the blinds drawn when there are people out looking for your child on your property? Okay? There's no way to explain that away. So, yeah, nope. That's just my opinion, allegedly, whatever. But it's so sad. I really feel for Christian and Pam, and I feel for Aubrey. She seemed like a beautiful person, and the world is sadly a darker place without her in it. That's pretty clear.
Absolutely. But let us know what you think about this one.
I also just wanted to say thank you to all of you out there who listened to this entire episode and took the time to learn about Aubrey's case, because I know that, you know, it's just the reality. We've been on the internet long enough, and we know that there are people that will click out of the episode when they hear that Aubrey was trans or even that she was Native American, which is the very sad reality of the world. But her story deserves to be heard. And yeah, I just really want to thank all of you who listened to this entire episode.
Yeah.
It means a lot.
A human is a human. Doesn't matter.
That's right.
What walk of life you're from. It doesn't matter what you got going on. We're all the same. Mm-hmm. You know,
your life should be valued.
Yeah. And just, it's just sad that what you do in life determines the kind of response you get in death.
Yeah.
And,
or even just the way you're born.
Right.
Like,
right.
Your race determines how people are going to, it's like things completely out of your control. Yeah. It's really sad. But anyway, thank you guys. And that's going to be it for us. We definitely want to hear your thoughts. Please go support this family on their Facebook page. Let them know that you're thinking of them. I think it goes a long way.
Absolutely.
And that's going to be it for us today, you guys. We will be back next week. But until then, keep on taking your mind a mile higher.